skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 45 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
It's going to be a big, big show for you today. And we're going to go through all the various elements in a short while. But there's something I wanted to talk about first. On the last episode, Mark told us about his experiences going to Secret Cinema to see the 28 Days Later show that they'd put on. And something good came from this, didn't it, Mark? Do you want to tell him about it?
So their posters that they put out in London on the underground station and they put out all over social media had MTV's thoughts. It had, I think, The Guardian, The Telegraph, and it had us. It said, we thought it was 10 out of 10, utterly mind-blown and better than the last one. Skip to the end.
We've finally made it. We finally made it onto a poster. DVD covers can't be far behind, surely.
That's the one. I'm well happy about that. So,
all quite surreal, isn't it?
It is. It's quite impressive. We're making a dent in the world.
It's just walking. If you walk past it, you just think, oh, yeah. What?
Yeah.
They actually care what we think.
Yeah.
Wow.
So let's try and get some free tickets.
People seem to care what we think, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of caring what you think, what are your thoughts on... That was a really bad segue, a really terrible segue. What are your thoughts on Alden Ehrenreich being named as the young Han Solo?
I'm not really concerned at all.
Have you seen anything with him in?
No.
See, I have. I've only ever seen him in one thing, and it was in Hail Caesar recently, which is a film I didn't care for at all. I thought it was Bob. But he was the best thing in it, and I can see the kind of charm that he has. And I think it's pretty good, actually.
It's a weird thing, because nowadays, whenever someone gets cast in a big role or a role like that, and I know it's Disney behind it, having looked at their track record of casting with Marvel, etc., I'm not worried.
Yeah, it's true.
I'm also quite glad they haven't gone for a massive, massive star like your Ryan Gosling, because then you just kind of, you can't have any expectations, really, apart from, well, we'll give him a go. Look what happened with Ray, Daisy Ridley, and what's his name, Boyega?
John Boyega.
We didn't know anything hardly about them. A couple of little small roles.
I did Attack the Block.
And that was it. So,
going back to the original trilogy.
Your
three main characters then were pretty much unknowns, and that worked out all right.
Usually casting some young, hungry actor, you know, someone who's not had a lot of success, works out usually.
Spider-Man, but
usually,
you know, in a good way.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad we're all on a similar page then. Shall we tell the people what we're going to be doing today?
What have we got on?
Well, we're going to be reviewing the latest film from highbrow auteur Terrence Malick. That is Knight of Cups. And I think all of our fans know how much we love the work of highbrow auteur Terrence Malick.
Just highbrow auteurs in general.
Just in general, you know, the old chai latte scarf-wearing crowd. We are a big fan of all of that.
It still doesn't seem real that we're actually reviewing this film. It's funny. This is proper, you know. We should be going to the theatre to watch this. I don't know.
Adam, do you want to tell them what the rewatch is this time?
Yeah, we're rewatching The Mask, the 1994 Jim Carrey film.
Excellent news. Mark, what year are we skipping back to?
1985, halfway through the 80s already.
Midway through. And we're also going to be talking about our top three aliens in film history. So, let's get started. Topic of conversation this time round was top three aliens in film. Now, I wasn't overly specific with this, so I've been quite broad. I don't know how you guys have interpreted this, but I meant it to mean individual specific aliens, specific characters, or alien races that you might have found in films. Did you guys implement any rules on this?
Not really, no. I mean, it is a very, very varied subject, so there's not really a lot you could do to narrow it down without discounting something entirely.
Yeah.
And it didn't really seem like you'd be doing the topic justice then.
How about you, Mark? Did you bring any rules in?
Nope, none at all. Just it was just trying to get it from about 86 down to 3. This is the one topic, we said it quite a lot, but we've had quite niche topics recently. This one for me has been the one where you've just got the biggest net of things to pick out of,
and it's
insane. And when I was seeing the ones coming through on Facebook and Twitter, it was just like, oh my god, there's so many.
Yeah, we'll definitely be reading out quite a few from social media in a bit. Adam, do you want to get the ball rolling?
Yeah, go on then. Well, I'll start off with one that I think is probably going to be unsurprising. The Xenomorph,
yeah,
the alien from Aliens. Great design
Oh, God, yeah. Geiger.
Scary as hell, just in general. And how it kind of develops as well from Alien to Aliens, because it's a very different style of horror from the first film to the second one. And we've debated numerous times on what's better, Alien or Aliens.
Yeah.
If we're honest with ourselves, it's on an even par, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's there is no better. But the alien creature himself and how that creature is, everything about it is scary.
Yeah.
From its birth, how the facehugger from the egg, it inseminates you. It then bursts out your chest and shreds its skin and grows and becomes the xenomorph creature itself. Is totally frightening, but wonderfully devised.
Yeah. The design of it is flawless. Like, Geiger's design is just so cool.
And it just, the way it matches the kind of ship that it starts out in.
Yeah.
And it was just perfect. It was such a great alien.
It's making me want to watch it. I'm glad one of us ticked that one off the list, because it's just absolutely awesome. It's one of the most scary aliens, I think, out there. It's not silly and cartoony. It's probably the closest you'd imagine of being terrified in a dark room and, oh my God, look at it.
And that's it. Like, there's moments, the moment in Alien, for example, where Ripley finally kind of gets on that sort of escape ship, and then it just appears out. It's just attached to the wall.
It's terrifying.
And all of a sudden the background starts to move and you're just like, oh,
it is. It's
so good.
I know you're going to pick that. I would have put cash money on you picking that one, so I'm not remotely surprised. But it's a damn good choice, and I think it's one we all agree with. Mark, what have you got?
It's a John Carpenter film.
Oh, I wonder which.
It's from the 80s, but I'm not going with The Thing.
I am surprised. I thought
the listeners out there don't need to hear me definitely talking about The Thing. They don't want to hear about you talking about Blade Runner, and they don't want to hear about you talking about V for Vendetta. I'm going with a different one. 1984 Starman.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going with a bit of a different alien here, more of a friendly, nice alien, obviously played by Jeff Bridges. He takes on the form of a widowed husband. Mm-hmm. So have you both seen this film?
I haven't. I've never seen it.
Yeah, and it's absolutely awesome. And we get to see it through the eyes of this alien in the human world. But he's a really well acted alien. His movements, the way his characteristics are, his eyes, the way his head turns, it's really well done. It's a very early role for Jeff Bridges. He's quite young in this film. But I urge you to watch it, Ben, at some point, because it's just a beautiful, beautiful movie. But I just think this guy's performance is incredible. The fact he is a human alien, and you never for one minute think, no, he's too human or he's too alien-like. He gets the mix bang on.
So it's one of those where he's in human form, but he's just odd enough to prove that he is an alien.
Exactly, that to a T. And Jeff Bridges, for me, I don't think he's done much of a bad film in his life, but people don't give him enough credit for this film. They talk about his later work, and I think this is up there in his top five films, and I absolutely adore it. But this film itself is fantastic. But as we're focusing more on just the aliens on this topic, I urge you to go and watch it. Adam, you've seen it. I'm sure you hopefully agree with what I'm saying.
It's such an interesting performance as well. Like you've said, it's quite different to the type of alien you've seen on screen before.
Yeah.
Because during that time, a lot of them were kind of the bad guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
So to see this Jeff Bridges, and you guys know how much I love Jeff Bridges.
Yeah. Big time.
In fact, the audience don't need to hear me talking about Jeff Bridges again. But no, I completely agree, man.
Is there going to come a point on this podcast where we'll have just
reiterated everything we've already said?
And each podcast will be about 30 seconds long of saying, you don't want to hear us talk about this shit again. The end. See you later.
We'll just have to put cite references to an episode we've already done.
Yeah. I'm going to go with a fun one, and this isn't a specific alien, this is a race of aliens, and it is the prawns from District 9.
Oh, yeah.
You fucking prawn. I love the prawns. Again, it's all down to the design for me, how they have this kind of seafoodish look about them. They're very, very odd, but very, very cool. And, you know, the whole film's great, this whole, you know, analogy for apartheid, and that's what the aliens are, and they're ghettoized and all this kind of stuff. But they feel, because of that, because it's an analogy, they feel human, even though they look like mollusks or something, they feel human. I just think they're cool as hell.
I remember seeing that film for the very first time, and I was blown away, thinking, what the hell is going on here? Like, it was so unique the way it was filmed. It wasn't that annoying handycam film, but it was that, you know, it looked cheap, but it was done very well.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time they came on the screen with guns and they're shooting at them, and I was literally like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
But there isn't much better than that in the last sort of 10, 15 years. They are scary as shit, but crazy as shit. Mm-hmm. I love them.
Yeah, I think you've kind of hit the nail on the head there as well. There's not really been that creativity
no.
like that in the last sort of 10 years, especially when it comes to sci-fi.
That original is hard to pull off.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what makes it stand out more than anything as well. Like that makes the whole alien race stand out a bit more because, mm-hmm. and like you say, the human element to it as well. The fact that it's well, I guess a bit like all of Blomkamp's films. It's something sort of based around reality that's just unbelievable.
It's definitely like all of Blomkamp films because he keeps ripping himself off with every successive film. But going back to the humanity, you know, one of the problems, there's a little kid one, isn't there?
Yeah.
And he is just like a little kid running around. There is a point where you kind of, in a way, forget that he's a little prawn-faced alien. He's just this little kid. I just think they're so cool.
Unbelievable start, guys. I'm loving this already. Right, let's get round to the second lot.
I'm going
to
go with a bit of a jokey one as well. Mm-hmm. Edgar the Bug. Men in Black.
Oh, nice.
Played by Vincent D'Onofrio, who, of course, we all know now as Kingpin, as well in Daredevil. I really like this alien because, one, I was a kid when I watched the film, so he was quite frightening at the time.
Yeah.
The giant cockroach-style alien.
Yeah.
But the thing that really kind of I really like about him is D'Onofrio's performance as him.
Yeah.
As well, like all the little jerks and twerks that he does.
Yeah, he's twitchy, isn't he?
Yeah, all the little twitchy sort of elements he does, and the way he kind of speaks as well.
Mm.
Like he's basically this giant cockroach that's crammed himself into a human skin,
mm-hmm.
and he walks and talks like that. He's very uncomfortable in his own skin as well. And I just think it's the performance itself just makes him stand out so much.
Yeah.
And it was kind of an early look at D'Onofrio, I guess, as actually, you know what, this guy can act, because
mm-hmm.
but he didn't really get enough credit for that, I don't think.
I think you've introduced it there as a bit of a silly one, or a bit of a funny one or something. You're right, it is, but it also is a very good performance because it's a tricky thing to do, a tricky thing to pull off with any kind of seriousness.
And I'll be honest, I kind of when we were sort of thinking about these lists, when we were talking about obviously when you get the topic last week, I did a bit of research and I thought, you know what, I'm actually going to watch Men in Black again, because it was one of those films that you watched as a kid and you thought it was fun. You kind of watch it as an adult, you're like, it's all right, it's not amazing, but it was different at the time. It was something completely new. And when I saw him on screen doing what he was doing, I was just, this is really impressive.
Yeah. Did you know that they've greenlit a crossover film between Men in Black and 21 Jump Street?
Well, what? Is that like is that a joke? Like, let's just do this. All right then, sod it. Let's sell it to the studio. Yeah, they're up for it.
It's just two random things shoved together,
crazy.
Isn't it?
Is it just a way to get Channing Tatum and Will Smith on screen together?
Probably. But I'm sure I've heard that they're not even going to have the original Men in Black guys. It's going to be Channing Tatum.
I literally have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill, and then just some dudes in black. Oh, sorry, Jonas Hill, as Mark calls it. And then just some dudes in black shades. But apparently it's not going to be Will Smith or the old fella.
I can't wait for it. I hope we can review it for a future episode.
We might be the only ones that see it.
Ridiculous. I'm going to follow on with a 1982 classic. Now, I know Ben's going to go, ugh. But I'm doing it for the reason of nostalgia. E.T.
Ugh.
E.T. for me as a child growing up was an amazing film, and I really did feel it was real and this story was real, because when you were a kid in the 80s, I was watching this thinking this is just someone who's filmed it. I didn't realise that the film was separate to real world. And I was watching it thinking, wow, I hope E.T. one comes to my
house.
Did
that stem from going to see Men at Work?
But I was a massive fan. My parents told me, actually, that I used to be obsessed and had pyjamas and all this of E.T. and I used to watch it all the time. But the funny thing was that my auntie went to America and she came back and got me this like big blow-up E.T.
Yeah.
And this was really hard
to
get.
That must have been frightening.
Well, this is the thing. I was probably about 8 or 9 and my mum said that they got me this E.T. that I really wanted. It was like from Universal Studios. It cost loads of money. They got it me, blew it all up, and I was like, wow. But then I shit the bed. And pissed the bed, literally.
You both shat and pissed the bed.
Yeah, and my mum and dad were saying that I didn't sleep and was screaming because it was in the corner of my bedroom just watching me, and I was terrified. And they didn't realise at first, like, oh, why is he wet and pooed the bed? Like, he was doing really well since he's left his cot. And then they came again, and I was screaming and screaming. They realised, and they just had to get rid of it and, like, kind of, you know, punch it and get rid of this 25 quid. At the time, that was a lot of money from a big present. They were like, no, you're not having this. And since then, I've just not really liked E.T. anymore.
Well, why have you just picked him as your favourite alien then, if he makes you shit through fear?
Because that's what you want. That's what you want. You're watching a horror film.
It's not what you want. It's not a horror film. It's a horror heartwarming 80s tale.
Well, before that time of them ruining it by getting me this big blow-up alien, I was loving E.T. So for that reason of 6 years of enjoying it until my auntie ruined it, I was loving E.T.
I think for Mark, it was a bed-warming 80s tale.
But yeah, an honest, true story. Still got the bed sheets.
Brilliant.
It was a big part of me. And I think Steven Spielberg nailed that film. I think it has a lot of heart. And the story is quite sweet, and I think I remember crying as a kid when he went home. I was like,
no, you were crying out of fear, probably.
Yeah. He's coming to touch me in the bed. But yeah, follow that then. I want a story from you.
I don't think
pants.
I can. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm not going to give you a story, but later on in this episode, we're going to be playing the final round of the imitation game, which is our quiz where we do impressions. So I'm going to give you an impression of this alien, and you tell me what the alien is. Come on. That's I've nailed it. That's perfect.
The listeners are like, oh, it's this. I don't know, mate.
It's the aliens from Mars Attacks, mate.
Oh! What are they called?
I don't know. Well, Martians. Yeah. And again, it was all down to character design for me. This was another Tim Burton. This is when Tim Burton was great for me. And let's not talk again about how he's gone off the rails wildly. But the creature designs are so great because they're that kind of 1920s version of what people thought Martians looked like. It's so old school, so traditional.
With giant brains with big eyes.
It looks so good.
That's a brilliant film. And have you seen that film recently?
No.
Obviously not, because you'd have got my perfect impression. But if you go and watch that film, you'd be surprised at how many people are in it. Like Michael J. Fox is in it. Tom Jones is in it. Sarah Jessica Parker. It's got the weirdest cast you've ever seen. But it's an absolutely brilliant film. And those aliens are so, so cool.
I don't think I've seen it in about 15 years.
I want to revisit it.
It's one of Burton's best for me.
I think, Tim Burton's just been soured entirely.
Yeah.
It is one of the best posters and covers I remember, just seeing his massive smile and his big eyes. And it's kind of like a transparent head, isn't it? Mm. You can see what's going on. Absolutely awesome. Yeah. But I haven't seen it for years, so I am going to get on that.
If it were blow up one of those aliens, you'd probably wake up in the night shitting and pissing.
And when you squeeze it, it does that noise.
Do you know, that's just made me think of something. A while back, I think it was around the time that like Bride of Chucky or something came out, you could buy Chucky dolls from shops that were battery powered, but all they did was that the head would move every now and again, like every few days.
That's
literally all the battery did. So it'd be sat, you know, on your shelf in your bedroom or whatever, and then once every few days or few weeks, the head would just move.
That's a genuine reason to poo your pants in your bed.
Because you'd get that, because that would be amazing to get it for someone and not let them know that it was battery powered.
Put the batteries in yourself.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That terrifies me, that doll. I don't ever want to talk about that anymore. That's
also with
E.T.
Well, if E.T. made you shit yourself, I wonder what Chucky did.
E.T. with a ginger wig. Whoa, I'm not getting in there. Adam, last one.
There's only one choice for my last one. Predator.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Again, I'd have had cash money on you picking that.
I love the Predator. I've probably spoken before, maybe on the podcast, maybe to you guys, about Alien versus Predator, the games, being one of my favourite series of all time. They really expanded on the Predator. I think Dark Horse Comics have expanded on the Predator quite a bit as well. They've done some great work. But as a species, as an alien, it was so cool.
Yeah.
And so to the fact that it literally came to Earth to hunt. It only ever fought worthy people.
Mm-hmm.
So it was only after he identified the armed forces taking back the village that he recognised them as worthy prey.
Yeah,
and that's when he started picking them off one by one. I just think it was such a cool concept for an alien. Everything about, and then obviously even though they went to expand a bit more in Predator 2, which I still don't mind. I like Predator 2.
It's all right,
and Predators.
I like
the actual ethos and the mythology that they created throughout those two films is still very good.
And there's a new one. There's a new one coming, isn't there?
Apparently so. Yeah,
I think it might be Shane Black who's doing it.
Yeah,
if it
I've
is,
heard, I've heard
could be good.
I've heard safe hands
so far. Like it looks like it should be. Hopefully, it should be okay. Mm. But providing they sort of go back to a bit about what made it good originally, and not just go, oh, let's try and make aliens.
Yeah,
but for Predator.
I bet Arnie's involved.
I hope so. I didn't watch Predators because Topher Grace was in it. Ugh. And I was just like, I can't take him seriously
That's fair. That's fair.
Do you know what I mean?
You also didn't miss anything. It was a bag of poo.
It was fairly bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the actual creature itself, I mean, I think it's Predator 2, when you see the ship and they've got like the alien skull there and it shows all the stuff they've hunted and all the weapons are there. Mm-hmm. It was just like, it's such a cool alien to have. And I don't understand why someone hasn't done more justice to it.
Yeah.
Inside the movie world, mm-hmm. the film universe.
Well, they'll ruin it for you if they do, so just maybe leave it as it is.
Yeah, but like I say, Shane Black's looking to do something, so hopefully that'll be quite good.
I'm intrigued by the new one.
I've just realised all my choices are from the 80s.
So there's a surprise.
This one's from the... I'm going to describe him. You've got to see if you can get it, okay? Coca-Cola slurping, McDonald's counter dancing, wheelchair riding, Skittles eating, boggle-eyed testicle face.
Ric Flair. Mac.
It's Mac.
Oh, I didn't get a guess.
I've got to go with Mac just for stupidity. The fact that I didn't know about this film at all until we started this podcast... Ben gave it... Oh, no, I delivered it as a rewatch after you telling me how much you hated it and it was an insult to film. But I actually enjoyed the film. I thought it was really funny.
Pretty sure you gave it 5 out of 10, which is ridiculous.
just quickly, Ben, you said you'd bet cash money on me having the Xenomorph Predator. Did you bet cash money on this?
Of course. But I started to question it. After he picked E.T., I was thinking, he can't have E.T. and Mac, surely. Because one is a blatant rip-off of the other.
Homage, but
he
has.
He's had, sorry, homage. But he has. He's had both. Fair
I'm
enough.
Having Mac. Mac is a legend. And
put Mac ahead of E.T., which is brilliant.
Mac's my favourite alien. He beats the Thing from John Carpenter right now. This is the one. I love the fact that this is such a stupid film, but it was just so much fun. And watching it with you two, this is when we did the rewatch. We were all sat on the couch. We watched this film from start to finish.
Actually, yeah.
And that, I laughed and watched Ben get angry, but just gave up with you angry. Just enjoyed it for what it was. And it was just so stupid. But the fact that there's so much product placement, and we've had so much fun about this. We've even started writing the sequel, you know. I absolutely love it. And I'm having it because I'm going to go on the website. I want to see that I chose this over all the great classics.
This was one of you've kind of hit the nail on the head with a certain point there. We were all watching it together. There was a point in which I think we were all trying to be slightly analytical about it. We wanted to kind of maybe take a few mental notes about certain things. But after a while, we just all gave up. There was so much wrong that we just all gave up and just sat there watching a film with no intention of just ripping it to shreds until we sat down here. And I think for the most part, we did kind of enjoy it a bit.
Yeah, it is fun because it's terrible and silly.
And we even got the director on the podcast.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Of course we did. I forgot about that. That was a long time ago.
I'm just laughing to myself about it now.
This is the one day that I wish we were live on YouTube because Adam's sitting here right now in a Coca-Cola t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
So it's had in some effect.
Because I knew we were coming here to record our top three aliens. My subconscious had connected it.
Yeah.
And this morning when I was getting dressed, I just put this shirt on like, oh, whatever.
There you go.
And I'm going to go home and have a McDonald's after this. So
That's what this subliminal advertising, it's not even subliminal. Yeah. That's what this blatant advertising does to you.
Come on then, Ben, top Mac.
I'm not going to be able to top Mac. I'm not going to be able to top Mac at all. This one, it's going to seem like an anti-climax, but this is actually a film that Adam mentioned earlier today, and it is Attack the Block. And the sort of dog aliens
are awesome.
They are my favourite alien creature design I have seen in 20 years, maybe, because they're unlike anything I've ever seen. Even like the prawns in District 9 are amazing, but they don't look too dissimilar from other creatures we've seen. The Martians from Mars Attacks are really old school, classic looking Martians. Mm-hmm. But these Attack the Block dog aliens with their kind of neon spit coming out their mouths and neon teeth. I've never seen anything like it before.
They're terrifying.
When I first watched that film, I loved the film. I think it's a brilliant film, but they were what stuck with me. Because I was like, this is, whoever came up with this? And you look at things like, I love Cloverfield. I think Cloverfield's a great film, but the alien design in that is like every other alien.
It's generic.
It's so generic. And you think someone like J.J. Abrams and people he's working with should have more about them to come up with something different. And then when I saw this, and did Joe Cornish write it as well as direct it?
I believe he did.
Because if he did, I'd like to think he had a hand in the creature designs because it's just so out there and so different. Mm. They're amazing.
It's their eyes.
Mm.
I remember watching this for the first time on a plane. I didn't know much about it. I didn't know. I just put it on as, oh, I'll give this a go. And it actually genuinely shit me up because I was like, they're so well done, but they're not like too far away from... Like, you see some aliens like Mac. You can't imagine Mac. But I can imagine these things at night, like those eyes glowing at me. And they've got like a shiny sort of teeth.
It's
like
teeth,
a neon.
The teeth are like neon. Yeah. The saliva.
That you could just picture in like looking at you if you're like, what's that, what the hell's that in that bush? But if you saw Mac in the bush, you'd just be like, oh, he's just
hanging out.
But it's pure frightening.
Yeah, they are. Mark, you know when you say that it shit you up, you didn't actually shit yourself on the plane, did you?
No,
because that's awkward.
No, that is a bad one. That's like, oh god. But yeah, that's a It's a film, again, I've only watched once, and I will. I'd love to see. Oh, well, I'd love to. I can watch it again, and I will, because I forgot how good it is.
It's a great film, and I want Joe Cornish to do more, because I think all he's done since is he co-wrote the Tintin film, which is shit.
Yeah.
And then he was part of the original writing team with Edgar Wright for Ant-Man. Mm-hmm. So I think still some of what he did contributed to that, and that was a great film. But I don't really think he's done. I don't think he's directed anything since, which is a shame, because he's. That was a great. You know, as your calling card or your opening gambit. In your career,
yeah,
that was a damn good one. You know, if that's his starting,
it's a good
point,
start, yeah.
Yeah, I want to see him do more.
Is that Josh Trank?
Oh dear.
We put it out to social media, and I can't read them all out. There's literally, this is the biggest response we've ever had. Mm. Crazy. Tom Round has put Mac from Mac and Me, Critters,
yeah,
and Alf the Alien. And I was like, no, mate, that's not a film. He's actually proved it and put an IMDb. There was the Project Alf, which is his first ever film.
Wasn't that a TV movie?
Though? Yeah.
That's not a movie.
We'll let him have it.
All right, we'll allow it.
It ate cats.
That's just a long episode.
Did you watch that as a kid, or is it showing
my
age?
I used to watch Alf, yeah.
Alf's amazing. David Max Bunting has put Predator. I'm not, how do you say the one from Alien you just
I'm
said?
I'm sorry, I'm laughing Zenimorph. Because
that's it.
All I can think of now is the Simpsons episode where he goes, these are Alf parts.
He's back in park form.
And The Thing, which I'm going to regret in a few months knowing I didn't pick that. Ruth Jones has put, she can't leave off E.T. Stitch, the Disney alien that sings Elvis songs.
As in Lilo and?
Yep, and Barf from Spaceballs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Philip Hand has put The Predator, The Thing, and NTI from The Abyss.
Nice.
Very cool. Richard Dickey's put The Thing, Alien, and Megamind.
Yeah.
Megamind.
I don't think I've ever seen that. It came out the same. Was it a DreamWorks film?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ben Mullings has put Groot.
Groot.
Nice.
Yoda, which I thought one of you guys might go for, an alien.
I'm surprised none of us have had a Star Wars one.
I was just thinking that.
Do you want to change it to a George Lucas? Magnus Henson has put Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
The Little Green Men on Toy Story.
Yeah, they're great.
And Jabba.
Yep.
Carrie Zilka has put The Bioraptors in Pitch Black.
I've never seen that.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh,
Pitch Black's great.
Kaiju from Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Kaiju.
And Cooper in Super 8, which is a very weird-looking sort of...
Yeah, yeah.
That's when
it's
JJ
It's a really
did.
Cool design.
Yeah, it is very cool. And finally, Gary Patterson has put Mac... Mac's dad and Mac's mum.
The whole Mac clan.
No, no love for the sister or brother then, no.
But it's not a top five, Adam. It's a top three. If it's the top five, they'd have been in.
I've really enjoyed this topic. It's been a good one.
That's been good fun.
Yeah. And whose choice is it next to you, Mark?
It is. I've been thinking since this one, I want to do another one where there's so much choice to go for. It's a top three again.
Yeah.
Top three robots in films.
Nice.
Get thinking, boys.
Now, do we count cyborgs in that?
Whatever you want. If it's a robot, you're having it.
We've been to see Knight of Cups, the new movie from highbrow auteur Terrence Malick. In the film, Christian Bale looks at things, sort of in the middle distance for about 2 hours.
Whatever's going on in that sort of middle distance sky is enthralling.
It must be something good. It'd be nice if we'd seen it, but all we saw was him staring off into middle distance. Can anyone do a better job than me explaining what this film's about or what happens in it?
I just want to start by saying we are going to spoil what happens in this film. So if you haven't seen it yet...
Mark, I don't know that we can, because I don't know what happened in this film.
It's based around tarot cards?
Yeah, because Knight of Cups is a tarot card, and then he goes to a tarot reader at one point or something.
Yeah, there's... there's
I was really looking forward to you giving it a good sort of 5 minutes, you know, going off on what actually happens. But...
The best I can possibly give you is that he is a Hollywood screenwriter who is a miserable git. He's successful in his work life, but has had lack of success with women, and his brother's died, and he's a bit miserable about it.
And
he's trying to then get over this, get out of his midlife crisis or whatever, by sleeping with a load of attractive women. That appears to be the whole thing, and then it just kind of ends.
Should we rate it?
It is so boring. I can't even begin to describe? I mean, I was really hungover when I watched it, but I don't think that would have made a difference.
I wasn't, and my only real thought on the entire thing was, this is what a first-year film student would do if his teacher made an assignment saying, shoot a film like Terrence Malick.
Yeah. Yeah, do the most arty, pretentious, Malick-esque film you can make. And it is at the point where he is at self-parody now, because this is basically just Tree of Life 2.
The perfect word, self-parody.
Yeah, one of the opening scenes is Christian Bale's character as a kid on a swing, which is the exact same shot he used for Sean Penn's character in Tree of Life. It's, oh my God, Malick, get a grip. And this is a guy who did great films back in the day. You ever seen The Thin Red Line?
Yeah. Incredible.
That's a great film. One of the best war films of all time. And now he does this ponderous shit. And the chai latte crowd wearing their berets, they lap it up. They're going, oh yeah, it's a masterpiece, a work of art. It's not, it's shit.
I wonder if they will with this one.
To be fair, it has got fairly middling reviews compared to, I think because it is too samey with Tree of Life, even the critics aren't loving it as much as they usually love its stuff.
When we announced we're going to do this, wasn't really looking forward to it. I've seen Tree of Life and it bored me. It was pretentious. But I thought to myself, go easy. Don't just use this as an attack, you know, to go, he's shit, he's an idiot, he writes and directs shit. But I can't really help him here because it's one of the most boring experiences I've ever had.
Yeah.
I refrained from getting my phone out so I could do other stuff. I thought, I'm going to have to watch this in case I miss something. But even the actors look bored because they're going for the whole, there's a lot of improvisation and they'll leave the camera rolling while, you know, Christian Bale will just literally be looking around. But I actually don't know if he knew the camera was rolling at times because he's looking around as if to say, where's that shot where I can get some cigarettes in about 10 minutes when I get a break? And they're like, that's the perfect take. That's exactly what I wanted. Yeah. And, you know, Matey Boy from American Beauty was in it, which I was nice to see him again on camera.
Wes Bentley.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, I haven't seen him for a while. But he even looked bored and couldn't be doing a bit. And then Natalie Portman came on screen, and I'm like, why are you all doing this? You don't Kate need Blanchett. To do this.
Why are you doing this?
As far as I've read, they were given scripts aside from Christian Bale, but in none of their scripts, Christian Bale was mentioned.
Yeah, and it wasn't scripts, it was outlines. It was sort of backgrounds for their character, but they still didn't have to come up with the dialogue. But there is no dialogue. All the dialogue is voiceover.
Yeah.
There's almost no actual speech between people in any of the scenes.
It's funny that you don't write the scripts and there's no speech between people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's amazing. It's like there's some kind of coincidence.
Yeah, it's like there's a correlation between not writing lines for people and there not being any lines in the film. Who'd have thunk? But the thing that annoyed me as well, like you said there, Mark, the camera was just sort of rolling and no one seemed to know what they were doing. There's a big party scene about halfway through the film, like a big Hollywood LA party. And at least twice during that scene, I saw people, either extras or actors, look directly into the lens. Because they hadn't blocked it, like any film, TV show, whatever, you block off how you want the direction to be so people know where to stand at the right times. Because this hadn't been blocked, people were just milling around willy-nilly and looking directly down the bloody lens. It was like that episode of Extras with Keith Chegwin.
No, you've looked at
it. It was so frustrating and distracting.
It's ridiculous, really. And it reminded me of, like, you know, like when there's an advert for like a Fragrant or Gap or something. It's like really arty sort of people just walking through with hair blowing and then it's slightly off camera. So you see slightly them walking and some pretentious sort of shot be like, Gap, new range out Friday. Yeah. But this was for 2 hours, not just a 30 seconds Gap advert. And there was one scene where I saw Christian Bale throwing a ball with his brother up against the wall and they're just kind of looking kind of half-hearted and he just stood on a skateboard and just did like a little slight trick and I thought, he's literally killing time. He's sitting there going, I don't know what the fuck's going on right now. Sorry to swear, but you know, I'm just going to just do whatever. And he was just improvising. Yeah. And you just thought to yourself, he has literally kept that in and the guy just stood on a skateboard probably just thinking, come on, mate, I'm bored.
And do you know what the worrying thing is when you say he's kept that in? Terrence Malick is notorious for filming hours and hours of footage and then he creates the film in the edit. The film isn't made on the page or out on the street. He creates the film in the edit. And he's kept shit like that in. You think, you know, this film, do you know when this was filmed? 2012. So he's had nigh on four years to edit this, and that was the best he could come up with.
Does it really surprise you, though? It's shocking, but then you're like, yeah, 4 years of just editing. Yeah. I'd love to see the director's cut. Like, imagine what didn't make it.
It would literally just be everything he filmed.
Yeah.
It'd be 6 days worth of footage. But
Christian Bale just having a piss and sitting there eating a hot dog, like, you know, what time are we in tomorrow, mate?
In one of those chairs that are on set.
Yeah, with his name on the back. The thing is, I know there are going to be some people who are listening to this who loved this film for whatever reason, and they're going to think we're terrible Philistines who know nothing. And that's fine. I'm happy to be that. Because I look at it this, I watched this film for 2 hours, and was I entertained? No. And who would be? Who is this for? Who would this entertain?
If you're sitting there going, oh, they don't get it, please tell us.
Yeah.
Tell us what we don't get now.
Yes, please. Go on to the Skip to the End Twitter page, our Facebook, anywhere. You explain to us what we're missing.
And that's not necessarily a challenge. That's me actually wanting to know. Yeah. I want to know from
me
you
too. Yeah.
What is entertaining, but what you found entertaining about this film. Because if you're going to just come back and say, oh, it's something different, this shouldn't be something, this shouldn't be made.
Yeah.
This is him basically stealing your money because he can't be asked to write a script. And he's just hired a few actors who have stolen money from the studio for doing nothing because they've not spoken at all. They've just walked around and looked at things.
Yeah.
It's a bit like Seth Rogen and This Is the End. He's just got his mates together, made a film and made money.
I would not be surprised if every good review of this that came out, Terrence Malick was sitting there laughing.
Probably.
Saying, oh,
I've done it again.
I can put anything on.
Yeah. And the thing is, this whole putting it together in the edit, you can tell that that's true because there are a lot of fairly big names in this who might as well not be. Like Jason Clarke, one of the stars of the last Terminator film, is in that party scene. You kind of overhear him
probably
speaking in the background.
Probably not something he should be bragging about.
No, maybe not. But, you know, he's a guy who top lines films. He was in Planet of the Apes as well. And here he is in the background of a scene. And he wasn't the only one. There were several examples of that because they'd been edited out.
We recently did Sucker Punch as a rewatch, and we were all saying how amazing and visionary Zack Snyder is, and he can make things look amazing. The one thing I will say about Terrence Malick is when he does shots of a country or a doorway or something that's happening, it looks beautiful.
Yeah.
The cinematography and the actual the image on screen is unbelievable, and it does frustrate me.
Do you know who the cinematographer on this film was?
Go on.
Emmanuel Lubezki.
Oh, okay.
That's why it looks
That's
great.
Why it looks
Three-time
like
Oscar winner, Lubezki.
Okay, there we go.
Yeah. Just want to quickly point out, while I agree with you, the cinematography is generally very good in his films and he makes things look nice, the two examples you pointed out were countryside and a doorway.
Action-packed film, this is. Some countryside and a door.
Top three doorways. But
was Christian Bale staring at either of these things at any point?
But he does, there was parts, okay, it's not credit to him, but there was times that it was directed well.
Oh,
it's just frustrating that the stuff that's actually happening is turd and you don't care about.
Yeah.
Which does make me think, imagine he did get with Christopher Nolan or someone and make a film that had someone direct him a bit better. Like, that looks shit, mate. Like, don't do that. And let me take a script and work with... I'd like to see...
It's not that he needs help from other directors. He has a very sort of poetic style that is beautiful to look at. He just needs to couple it with an actual script and a linear narrative.
Yeah.
None of this, let's just let Hollywood stars wander around for days while I film them. Shit. Get a script and film it.
And if you think Ben's being too harsh there, he's being very kind because they are literally walking around as if you're just going for a stroll around your little local neighbourhood, and it's ridiculous.
Please, anyone out there, if you've not seen this, seek it out, watch this film, and then watch The Thin Red Line by the same director, and you'll see what he is capable of.
This, to me, is literally a case of reality TV done by a pretentious director.
Just missing the Kardashians. That's all it was missing.
It's reality TV for the chai latte crowd.
Yeah. And it's and it is as awful as that sounds.
I've read a few reviews out there today, and I've just been on sort of IMDb looking at what people are saying. I don't care what the Telegraph and these Mag of the Guardians, because they're going to love this sort of stuff. And people are like, I've never been so bored in my life. One out of ten. This is dreadful. I don't get it. He's gone so far up his own arse, he's come out again. So it isn't just us three who love action films and
they
Marvel
can't print
films.
That.
Where they put that? You can't print that.
But, you know, it isn't us three just because we don't get it. I think we're just being honest and saying that we don't enjoy this sort of stuff.
No, I mean, I don't get it.
No.
I'm happy enough to say that. I have to put my
I want someone to prove me wrong.
I don't get this.
Watch it again, it suddenly clicks.
Yeah.
I'm not watching that again.
No. not a chance. Not in this lifetime. Can we score it?
I'm not going to be too harsh and say 1 out of 10 because it's not for me. It's not like we've been really, you know, it's not Battlefield Earth bad because there's some bits of it.
That's fair.
I'm just going to give it like a 2.
Yeah.
I just think 1's a bit too cruel.
Okay.
And it's not a duck egg.
I'm going to give it a 4, simply because of how beautiful it looks. I think the direction and the cinematography especially, it is a great looking film. If only they could have coupled that with some action or plot or anything really at all. So 4 out of 10 for me.
See, I'm finding it difficult to score just because...
nothing happened.
I really don't feel strongly about this film in any way. Mm. I don't think they've got to a point with this film where I can feel strongly about it.
Yeah.
In either a way of I didn't like it this much or I liked it this much. I'm just going to say 3.
Yeah. Well, that's good because that makes the maths easy.
That's why I've given it a 3.
Thanks, mate. Cheers, dude. Overall, 3 out of 10.
It's prize giveaway time. On the last episode, we ran the competition for Neighbours 2. Thanks to our good friends at Universal, they gave us 5 bundles, which is a T-shirt, you get a hat, a Bluetooth speaker, a backpack, and sunglasses for the summer. So really good prizes.
Good time in that.
All I did is ask, what was the name of the character that Seth Rogen plays in Neighbours 1 and 2? It isn't Neighbours as in Tommy Wise's Neighbours before. So sorry, Adam, you didn't get that right.
That was The Neighbours.
Yeah. Yeah. And remember, it's known as Bad Neighbours in this country.
Oh.
Bad Neighbours too.
Sorry, yep, that's what I meant. So the answer was Mac Radner. And the winners are on Facebook, Thomas Holt, Louise Cavey, Steve Facer, and Darren Bergenoin. Whatever happens, you'll get an inbox.
I reckon 4 out of those 5 were mispronounced.
And on Twitter, Alexander Pollock. Now, I've got another prize for next time. And it's from our good friends at Headshot Clothing.
Hey.
They've designed a brand new Beatle shirt. Beatle shirt? A Beetlejuice t-shirt.
I was going to say, it better not be a Beatle shirt because they'll get sued.
Now I'm going to show you both the design, which has just been launched.
That's cool.
That's very, very
cool.
Oh,
that's cool. Ace.
And they're not actually releasing this t-shirt until the end of May. They're going to bring it out at a Comic-Con. But they've told me that they'll give us this prize next week and you'll be the very first person to own this t-shirt before
that's
it goes
impressive.
On actual release.
Cool.
So that's very awesome
impressive.
Of them. I want to keep it quite simple because I want a lot of people to enter this because it's a very cool prize. Who directed the movie Beetlejuice? I reckon that's pretty fair.
We've mentioned his name a fair few times already today.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it.
So go on Facebook or Twitter or skiptheend.co.uk. Let us know the answer to that and I'll announce it in 2 weeks. But this is literally going to be the first person to own this t-shirt. So it doesn't get much better than that.
Bowling for Soup did a song called 1985.
Did they now?
I'm not using that for this section.
Well, if you don't want to, you don't want to. But it's skip back in time. It's 1985.
I really wanted to know where it was going with that. I was like, Bowling for Soup.
This must be the first time anyone anywhere has mentioned Bowling for Soup in at least 15 years.
Probably.
They are still going, though.
The big fella can't be.
He is?
He is,
heart
yeah.
disease,
yeah.
surely.
I follow them on Facebook. Big fan. Big fan.
I think
he's a big man.
Yeah, I think they're playing soon.
They're probably supporting Wheatus.
But, it wouldn't surprise me.
But we digest.
Or digress.
That was the joke.
Was it?
Kind of. Said he was fat. I went for a
the
eating
fat
joke.
People eat and therefore they digest. Yeah, I get
it. It was an attempt at a joke. I don't really know.
Where do you go from Bowling for Soup? 1985.
1985. It's skipped back in time. It's another good year. And I'm very, very curious to know what Mark's got because when I was researching this, I saw a lot of films that Mark loves.
Yeah.
It's been the toughest one yet. Big time.
So I'm going to go to you first, Mark. Back to the Future.
It's got to be. It was very, very close. I'm not going to lie because I love the Goonies. But Back to the Future for me, you know this. I absolutely love it. It's in my top 5 films of all time.
Yeah.
It's an absolute work of art. It's...
And of course you went to
Secret Cinema. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just love McFly. I love Doc. I love Einstein.
Are they up there with Bowling for Soup?
Yeah, they're great. 5 Colours in My Hair is one of my favourite songs. But
you actually know one of their songs.
It's amazing though because they join up with Busted and become
McBusted.
So we could get together McBowling for Soup.
Oh man, that's it.
It's the dream.
forget what I've got to say about Back to the Future. I'm talking, you know, that's, this is what I want to know about. No, Back to the Future for me is one of my favourite films ever made. I think it's a genius film. I think it's, joking aside, it's way before its time. You watch it now and it doesn't look like it's 30 years old. Mm. It is an absolute stunning film. The sequel's very good as well, where they usually don't go as well. The third's not bad. Yeah. People say it's not great and it's not as good. But Back to the Future 1 is absolute perfection. I think Michael J. Fox is an incredible actor. I love Doc, man. I think he's such a great kind of character. And you know the story by now. It's just genius. You go back in time and it just kicks ass. Everything about it, I love it. Done.
And it's amazing how well it's lived on. It's not just a film that people think, oh yeah, I like that, I'll watch that again. It is the sort of film, yeah, where Secret Cinema creates the whole of Hill Valley again. You know, yeah, it was a point where I think you would have called it a cult film, but now it's legendary, isn't it?
And you know, I've got it.
Awesome.
Is that yours as well?
Yeah. I remember being introduced into this film by my father, mm-hmm, and it blew my mind as a kid. And it's everything you want it to be. It's got a great protagonist, yeah, some great antagonists in Biff as well.
Oh, Biff rules.
And it's so good. It's so cleverly written. And when you compare it, when you put it with the other two as well, everything that kind of links in together is so well done. And you see it in film now where people try and write kind of trilogies and things at the same time, and they try and do it so it all links in, and they just, it's now more poignant now than ever as to how difficult that is to get right.
Yeah.
And they did. They nailed it.
And that's an interesting point, actually, because I think in this day and age, people try and create franchises. Rather than making a good film, that if it succeeds, you can then make another one, hopefully, they try and create a franchise from the get-go by leaving things dangling and, you know, cliffhangers and whatnot. Whereas that isn't the case with Back to the Future. They made this brilliant film and thought, we've created this world, this concept, there's got to be more to do. And then they did Back to the Future 2, which for me personally, I think is better than the first one. I love the second one. But they didn't set out to do that. They were able to do more because the first one was so good.
They just shook the bit at the end where Doc comes back and says, it's your kids, Marty!
Yeah, and that was more speculative. That wasn't, we're definitely going to make another one. That was kind of like, if we do, here we go.
Wasn't that when they put the like, to be continued question mark?
Yeah.
It's like, we'll be back on the end of Mac and Me when they drive off. And the bubble
gum. Were they?
But no, it is... Exactly what you're saying. Like the fact that they now release trainers for a 30-year anniversary, and everyone wants to try and get the ones that McFly had, and the ones that now I've heard that they're going to do a self-lacing shoe in a couple of years, just like it. And
they'll release this year.
Yeah, you know, people still walk around when we go to cons as Marty with the hoverboard and the iconic bag and everything. It's just such an iconic film where you want the glasses that they're wearing, the jackets that do themselves up. And it just looks brilliant. You know,
it's so good. It's so
it's amazing.
Awesome.
And it's, you know, if someone said to you, think of a time machine, one of the first things you would think of would be the DeLorean.
Yeah, exactly that. And it's, is it Ernest, what's the writer for Ready Player One?
Ernest Cline.
He got himself an actual DeLorean when he made so much money off his first book. And that's the sort of thing I would do. If I got a lot of money, I will buy one of them. And you will.
It's longevity.
It is.
It's how long it lasted within the public culture as well, the pop culture. And everything about the film, it just screams intelligent. Mm-hmm. I mean, even from the little touches of, you know, he goes to meet Doc at Twin Pine Mall. And as he goes back in time, he runs over one of the pine trees. And then later on, it's called Lone Pine Mall when he comes back to
it. It's genius, isn't it? Everything so much.
They've just done so much thought has gone into it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's got a script.
Yeah.
You know, it has a script, which is good.
Oh, what now?
Yeah, a script.
Yeah. You want to tell that Malik
fella. It does help, doesn't it? But the flux capacitor and everything, all the detail, it all looks so good. You know, I remember the perfect Pepsi and all this. You know, we could talk about this for 25 minutes. We shouldn't. But it's an absolute beautiful film. And
Ben's still got his choice to reveal.
Oh,
as
forgot
well.
That. So, yeah, we can't. So we can't. You tell me you haven't picked it.
We can't hold that back.
You've only got 2 minutes.
Well, that's fine because it's not one I need to talk about a lot because it is one I talked about very recently when we did our top sports films of all time. I have, of course, picked Rocky IV, which is the best one of the Rocky films in my opinion. It's also one of the very best sport films of all time, as I've said, and just one of the best films. I love this film. It's one of my go-tos. It's a film I watch at least a couple of times a year, and it never gets old. It is a magnificent movie.
It truly is. And this was a difficult year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, it was a good year.
Oh, Rocky IV, just the soundtrack.
Yeah.
the bad guy. We did talk about it a lot, but I still like talking about it again. I still think he's the best baddie that Rocky's ever faced.
Drago, yeah.
I know people will argue, no, you can't say that Mr. T or Hulk Hogan.
Thunderlips.
Thunderlips and Clubber Lang.
Yeah, but I love him. I believed him as well. When I watched it as a kid, I remember seeing, like, that guy is actually going to defeat Rocky. This is the first time I really think he's going to, you know, well, actually his friend got killed, so it's still pretty...
Yeah, man, they built it. Apollo Creed put him over.
Yeah. Oh, he did. Yeah, he did the honors.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
That's the sort of commitment you want from your friend.
Well, put him under.
This is when you realise how many good films are out. So social media, Samir Alam agrees, Rocky IV straight off. Mm-hmm. Jonesy has put Weird Science.
Oh, great film. Kelly LeBrock in that.
He's just literally put, as a kid growing up, Kelly LeBrock was steaming.
Smoking.
Yeah. Philip Rogers has said he's got to go with Goonies as it's got the greatest dance move ever, the Truffle Shuffle. That was one of my favourite films as a kid as well. It's hard to leave that off. Reacted, which is at Elusive Man, The Breakfast Club, a film all about being in detention that just works brilliantly. John Hughes, perfect. Drawn Out Dad, A View to Kill, which I've never seen.
Bond?
Yep, never seen that one. Not, there's some I've never got round to seeing.
Huh.
Emma Fox has put, such a great year with Goonies, Set Elmo's Fire, but I've got to go with Nightmare on Elm Street.
Was that the first one?
Freddy's back, yeah.
Oh, right. Second one.
Yeah, terrifying. Jason Fielding, Commando.
Yeah.
I mean, that's classic, aren't they? And finally, Stev Golsh, which is at Rogue Pest, Teen Wolf.
Yeah.
Which you forget, you know, McFly.
Michael J. Fox
bought that out the same year.
Yeah. Mm.
It's not quite as good. I remember watching it with your brother recently, and I was like, you've got to watch this film. It's amazing. Basically, it's McFly, but as a fox. And we watched
as a fox.
It wasn't Teen Fox.
As a wolf. Michael, you can see where I got that from.
Michael J. Wolf in Teen Fox.
And we watched it, and it was like, oh, that wasn't as good as I remember. But, you know, what a year.
That's a stunning review, that is. I watched it and it's not as good as I remember.
Yeah. It just didn't quite have it. So.
That's not getting on the poster.
God, we're nearly... That's it, halfway through. 1984 next.
1984 next?
Yeah.
I've got to try and find a song for that. I can reference a band from.
Fountains of Wayne or someone like that. If you can come with someone like that, that'd be amazing.
It's party time!
Bit interesting because rewatches have been really good recently, haven't they?
Yeah,
we've all really enjoyed them. Even Sucker Punch, which maybe didn't get the highest reviews, it was probably looking for from Skip to the End. I know Zach's a big fan. I know he's paying attention to it. So I thought I'd try and carry it on and go with The Mask.
Yeah,
because it's a Dark Horse Comics rarely get these sort of films, and it's not really the Marvel media machine or the Warner Brothers DC machine. So I wanted us to revisit this film because I know we spoke about a few bits and pieces about it before.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron Diaz, of course, for you guys. So watching it back, Ben, thoughts?
My instant thoughts were I enjoyed it very much. But not as much as I did when I was a kid. I was kind of annoyed at myself that I wasn't enjoying it as much as I thought I was going to. I remembered all the jokes, all the throwaway lines were coming back to me straight away. Because when this film came out in 94, I'd have been about 11. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure I saw it at the cinema, and then I had it on VHS. And I must have worn that damn tape out, because I watched this film so many times. So I was watching it again for the first time in maybe a decade. And I was laughing out of memory. I was laughing because I remembered this scene, or I remembered what he was about to say. It all came flooding back. But then when all was said and done, I was like, yeah, I think it was... It's not that it was of its time, it's that I was of the age to enjoy it then more than I am now. But I still enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it, and thank you, Jim Carrey, because you've saved Skip the End, because after we watched the main review at the cinema, I was ready to end it all.
Yeah.
And to then watch this with a beer at home made everything okay again. I really did... Ben, we just said it perfectly. I think I must have been like 12 watching this. And it's scary that you watch a film that much as a kid, because you've got a lot more time. You'll watch a film 50 times, and that's not an exaggeration. And you know the lines. And I was watching it, I was like, there's the bad guy, he's now going to say this, and I'm now this. And I knew it all still. And I watched this film probably 20 years ago. You know, I haven't watched it recently, but I knew the lines again and I loved it. And I thought to myself, I know he's getting old now and he's done stuff like Dumb and Dumber 2, but I miss Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
Because he was born to be Ace Ventura. He was born to be the Mask, and that's him. That's what he does perfectly. And I like the serious roles like Man on the Moon and Eternal Sunshine, but I love this Jim Carrey. And it made me think, maybe he is too old now to be that stupid character, but I bloody loved it.
Back in that sort of time between sort of 1990 and 1999, his comedic acting was the best thing in everything he did.
Yeah.
And this was the pinnacle of that, really. I mean, when he's... This film is not a great film, if we're honest with ourselves. Like, we look at how it moves from plot point to plot point. It's not an amazing film, but he is the linchpin of it, and he just does it so well. The Mask is such a wacky character in the comic books. He's so odd. One of the most powerful characters, because he bends reality to his will, but so odd and so out there that I was... Looking back now, I'm surprised a film like this ever got made.
Yeah.
But it did, and it works.
It's quite a risky film, isn't it? Like you're saying, it's quite a dark story, and you think, well, it worked for kids. We were all sitting there watching it as kids, and when you watch it, it's quite violent.
It's just, if you try and sum it up, you know, if you go into the pitch meeting to try and sell this to Warner's or whichever studio made it, that's going to have to be a hell of a pitch to convince them to make this film, because it's so out there and so odd.
Yeah.
Guy finds a magical mask, which we think might have once belonged to Norse god Loki, turns him into a green-faced nut job who can sing, dance, produce guns from thin air and gets the girl. You know, it's not an easy sell to a studio, but they managed it and they made it.
Not at all. And especially in the respect of, he's kind of more of an anti-hero than the kind of, I guess, the kind of person that they wanted kids to look up to at the time.
Yeah.
I think Batman probably led the way in breaking, shattering those sort of, we don't want kids to watch this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the pitch meeting must have been extremely difficult.
Yeah. How do you get something like this made? But something you touched on there was around this sort of time, Carey was the guy. It's 1994 as well was the year. 1994, he released this, Ace Ventura Pet Detective and Dumb and Dumber. All three of those films came out in 1 year. And weirdly enough, because people obviously, or not everyone, had latched on to how great he was nominated for Worst Newcomer at the Razzies for those three films. Wow. The Razzies obviously just looked at him as this rubber-faced loon and went, nah, not for us. Yeah. And then you think, now you look back on these three films as being the main films in his canon, really.
And three of the biggest comedies of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, I think Dumb and Dumber... No, I think this one took the most money, actually, because it was family-friendly.
Yeah.
But I think if you go back and watch them, Dumb and Dumber stands up best of the three. But all three of them have their merits. And to think that he did them all in 1 year, and that was his breakthrough year.
I mean, it's difficult for me to choose, because I'm just thinking about Ace Ventura there. And I mean, how good is that film?
Oh, God, it's so funny.
He's done three of the best comedies in the 90s. There are better, but if you've got the top 10 comedies of the 90s, he's done three in 1 year. That's insane. Yeah. I didn't realise they were all in the same year.
1994,
What did he sleep that year?
Apparently not. By his sort of rubber face bouncing around, I imagine he did a lot of coke. Allegedly. No, not even allegedly. It's a wild speculation.
Yeah, that's most definitely not true. But it may be.
But the film itself, it was really good to revisit, and it was one of those ones, if you hadn't have picked it, I wouldn't have just chose to watch this. It's one of those ones I need as a rewatch. And I will say this now, I don't think it looks as dated as a lot of the films that came out in the 90s. When his jaws drop in and his tongue's rolling out and he's wacky dancing and moving out the way of bullets and stuff, I think the CGI is bloody good and it still looks now.
I think it just fits in well with the character.
Yeah.
The fact that it does look a bit wacky, a bit cartoony.
Well, that's the point. It's supposed to look like a Tex Avery cartoon.
Yeah.
So because it's meant to be cartoony and not life realistic, it hasn't aged badly. It still looks good.
It looks really good.
Yeah.
I think the character himself, I absolutely loved. I've not read any of the, you know, I don't know any of this stuff. I just watched it for a comedy at the time. But we have to talk a little bit about the Lady in Red. I mean, we're cool to say out, but that's her first ever appearance in a main movie. And it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't realise how young she is in that film. You look at her and you're like, you are literally just, what is she? Probably about 20?
Something like that,
she's so young. I mean, this isn't going to be my normal, like, she's fit and do my Mark thing. But she's absolutely gorgeous.
It's breathtaking.
It is. And when we were kids, I think I must have been 11 or 12. I still don't think I was quite into women as much as you are at 16. But you know, when you know, I was still kicking a football, loving sport. I wasn't. My dad would be like watching it with me, like, "Wow, she's unreal," and I'm like, "Yeah, she's all right." But now I'm like, she is perfection in that film.
And we're not just objectifying her here. No. The film does. The film presents her in that light. She comes into the bank wearing that figure-hugging red dress. The first time Ipkiss looks over at her, she's bent down, and you see her leg poking out the dress, and the camera sort of pans up from her leg, and then she's been out in the rain, so her top is wet. Yeah. You know, the film is presenting her in that way. So, of course, we're reacting in this way
too. But it's true.
Because she is stunning in that
way. Is that not an interesting point as well? Because the film presents her in this way. At the start, when we first meet, she's just the mob... You know, mob gangsters, the gangster's girlfriend or whatever. She sings at the club. But she as a character actually develops within the course of the film.
Yeah, she does.
So she actually, you know, they actually put a bit of meat on the bone, so to speak, give her a bit of character and actually develop her and change her from that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, like, joking aside, they sometimes put people like Megan Fox in films because they look good. But Cameron Diaz actually is a very good actress. And we've seen her now in Gangs of New York in very serious roles. Yeah.
And John Malkovich.
Yeah, you know, incredibly well. Career. No, and you do see the potential in this performance. It's not just a bit of eye candy. And she's really likable as a character, you know. And I like the dog Milo as well. I'm going to say it. I love that little fellow. I think he's great. And when he actually finally gets the mask on, again,
so cool.
Looks awesome.
Yeah. And speaking of the comics, you mentioned the comics there, Mark, and you did earlier. Have you read any of the comics?
Yes.
See, I had never read any until this weekend. I thought, right, I'm going to seek them out. It's so much darker than the film.
Yeah.
Because I think there was a short run of it for about a year or two before the film came out. After the film came out, they kind of softened the comic a bit to fit in with the film. And then there was a cartoon based on the film as well. So they wanted everything to kind of match. Yep. But the earlier stuff, like Stanley Ipkiss... In the original, spoiler alert for a nearly 30-year-old comic, but Stanley Ipkiss is an arsehole. He's a guy that when he puts on the mask, he goes on this like revenge kill spree.
Yeah.
He's just murdering people. Like he mows down a guy with his car, a guy who owes him $60. And then at the end of it, his girlfriend realizes that he's turned into a prick, so she shoots him dead. That is the end of Stanley Ipkiss in the comic. He gets murdered by his girlfriend because he's turned into a dick.
It's fantastic.
It's so dark.
Obviously, whoa. I hadn't read it as a kid.
Yeah.
But it's something that I remember. I had a chat with... this about 8 years ago, 9 years ago now, I was chatting to a friend of mine and we got onto the subject of Jim Carrey and started talking about The Mask, and he was big into comic books at the time. He just went, oh, have you ever read any of the Mask? And I read a couple a few years back. He went, oh, so you've not read the original print run? I said, no. He goes, there you go.
Yeah.
Give me three or four comics. Jesus. Like, exactly what he said. It was just... I was literally sat there reading them, and I was enthralled, but just baffled as to how this character was projected afterwards to how he was before.
Because he's just an indiscriminate murderer, and he's wacky, and he's having fun, and he's bouncing around, you know, cracking one-liners like he does in the film, but he's murdering people left, right, and centre. And again, this plays into what we were saying about the pitch meeting. If they'd have gone into the pitch meeting to pitch this film...
With the comics.
Yeah, if the people at whatever studio would have gone, oh, have you got anything that this is based on? Let's have a look at that comic. Ooh, no. We're not doing this.
And you want this to be a PG, yeah?
Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Come out in the summer and make some money following Ace Ventura. Get out.
It makes you wonder if they pitched it and the guy went, no. And he just went, we could change it from the comics a bit.
Yeah.
Okay, what are we going to change? But
instead of murdering about 50 people, we'll just let him do a lovely dance. Okay, sold, we'll make it.
I'm going to ask you both a question. I want you to be completely honest with me. Did you ever see Son of Mask?
I did not. No.
No, I didn't.
It's the worst piece of shit you'll ever see.
That's unsurprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, the fact that none of the original cast went for it, it is...
I don't know why they would.
Terrible.
And the thing is, I think it was because Carey, because his career took off, he said he didn't want to do a sequel, which is a shame. I mean, it probably would have just been diminishing returns.
If only he would have kept that for Dumb and Dumber 2.
Well, yeah, true. But I would like to have seen a sequel with him in it and to see more of Diaz's character develop and so on. It is a shame that those two didn't revisit that world.
Well, the thing is, we are in a point now where we are getting a lot of these films coming back, and it wouldn't surprise me in the next couple of years where you see him sign a deal, he's skint, needs more Coke, and Coca-Cola. It wouldn't surprise me if he does it. If he did it with Dumb and Dumber 2 after all these years, he's not scared to paint his face green again, is he? Let's be honest about it, he'll do it.
It's strange because he did Kick-Ass 2, didn't he? Which is obviously quite violent.
Yeah.
And he actually came out...
I didn't want to be in it.
Violence in film because of there was a
school shooting, wasn't there?
I can't remember which one it was in America.
It's a horrible thing to say, isn't it? I can't remember which one it was because there are so bloody many
that week.
Yeah.
But he then pretty much turned away from any. He didn't want to do violent films. And The Mask is quite a violent film in certain aspects. Mm. A lot of guns flying around. So it's whether he'd actually want to do something like that.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I think if they did it now, it would be a bit more lighthearted than it was.
Yeah, it'd have to be.
I actually absolutely loved watching it again. It's a shame that you didn't enjoy it as much.
It's not that I didn't enjoy it. It's just because I hadn't seen it in so long. It kind of dawned on me that I loved it then, didn't love it so much now. But it was nice to revisit it, certainly.
It's like going for a beer with your old mate, getting to the bar, you sit down, like, oh, mate, how's it going? And then you remember they are a bit of a dick, actually. And you're like, okay, well, I need to go now, but, enjoy your pint.
You don't normally meet up.
Oh, yeah, okay, see you later. It's that sort of thing. Let's score it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go too high, but I really enjoyed it again. It's not on the level of what we have been doing recently of tens and stuff, but it's bloody good. So I think seven's fair. I think it's a really enjoyable, good comedy, and it was nice to revisit.
Yeah. It's a solid seven for me as well.
Same for me. I think it wouldn't go lower.
It's fair.
Maybe wouldn't go. Maybe we'd go higher on a good day.
Yeah.
But I think seven's a fair result.
So is it your... Remember that Gemma's now going to be coming on next episode.
Well, this is it, yeah. So
what have we given her previously? Batman and Robin?
She had Batman and Robin and Catwoman, I think.
Oh, dear.
So I am going to keep that standard up. Now, I've had this particular rewatch set, locked and loaded, ready to pull out for weeks, months even, that I've been waiting for this particular episode. And now that we've decided that Gemma's going to be on it, there was a weird coincidence, and it is entirely a coincidence. A few weeks ago, one of our topics was people who'd had the up-down mixed bag years, or last episode even.
It's not Norbit, is it?
No, it's not Norbit. But Gemma, Popcorn Heart, when she came through on the social media and gave one of her suggestions, she actually named the film that I was going to pick. So coincidentally, she's going to have to watch Freddy Got Fingered.
Oh, no. Jesus. You do realise that she can still pull out right now and not come on the episode.
Why?
Oh, man, it's going to be funny. Not the film, talking about it.
My turn to be Games Master this week for the Imitation Game.
Mm-hmm.
So for you guys who haven't listened before, which I don't understand why you've not, we're hilarious, especially this segment.
go back and listen to it as well.
Yeah, go back and listen to it. Yeah. The Imitation Game is we've got a small pot, which we've put out on social media before, and we will again.
The famous pot.
Yeah.
The crowd goes wild.
We've actually upgraded this week. We've got a green one. Ooh. So if you guys are following the adventures of the pot, so to speak. We'll have a new picture up. It'll be a new pot. But there's 10 names inside it. Now, it's Mark and Ben this week. I have to pick them out in turns and do an impression of a character or something that actor is famous for or said or done. And the other person has to guess who it is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing this in teams at the minute. I believe that Children of Badham, me and Ben, are currently winning.
Yeah.
Seven.
Seven we got, yeah.
And me and Mark got six.
Team Madam got six. And who are we, Mark?
We are Team Barky Bark.
Correct.
Team Barky Bark. So it's up to Team Barky Bark this week to try and do it. And as always, if you feel we're not putting the effort in, if you feel the impression was a bit poor, you've not really tried, you've not really given it your all, it can be DeVetoed.
It can be DeVetoed.
So
this honestly is the one time in the podcast where I'm actually nervous. My hands are sweaty and I this is scary. So those people who are saying on social media, oh, you're dreadful, it's tough.
It really is tough.
It is. When you're sitting here, when you're in the chair, it's very difficult. Yeah. I'm quite relieved that I don't have to do it this week. I remember
Chris Tarrant saying on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire that all the people at home are screaming at TV, but when you're in that chair, this is exactly the same.
This is exactly the same as having £1 million.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. And a studio full of people.
So who wants to start? Which one of you wants to pick first?
I will, because it's closer.
Okay.
Obi-Wan.
Please give me more than that.
That's it.
No,
that's all you're getting.
I can't just say that.
Obi-Wan.
I didn't know there was anyone Japanese in Star Wars.
God, that's not easy. That's all I'm going with. You
that
can
is
guess
terrible.
It. I'm warming up. My first one.
Darth Vader. James Earl Jones.
No, Alec Guinness.
Alec Guinness.
Alec Guinness.
I don't understand why you didn't go with "You'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy."
These aren't the droids you're looking for. Yes. A million and one quotes you could have added.
It's not
and
the best
and
start.
You went with Obi-Wan. You got him saying his own name.
Obi-Wan, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
It's not the best start, but I'm still confident.
But you know, you've still got nine in the pot, so come on, Ben.
It's going to be a disaster, this.
Obi-Wan. You just read out who they play in the film, yeah? In a Scottish accent. I'll miss this show.
At least you've set your benchmark now, Mark. Yeah. You don't want Ben. Ben knows what to expect.
Oh, very bad, very bad. 11 toothpicks on the floor. 11 toothpicks on the floor. Very bad.
Oh, Rain Man. What's his name? Dustin Hoffman.
Oh, yes! Nailed. Good work.
Good impression.
Thanks, man.
Put the bunny back in the box. Not the bees! Not the bees!
Nicolas Cage.
Yes. That was my attempt.
Oh, was it Con
Air?
Seven.
Yeah, Southern accent.
Con Air and then Wicker Man.
Yeah,
nice,
brilliant.
Nice.
That wasn't bad.
That's right,
much
right.
better. Much better than your first one. That's two.
Yoda.
Lick my love pump.
Oh, shit. It's the guy from Spinal Tap, and I can't remember his real name.
This one goes to 11. I can do as many quotes as I like. You're still not going to get it, are you?
No.
You're going to pass.
Annoyingly, it's obviously a guy from Spinal Tap, and I can't remember his name. Just to save time, I'm going to have to pass and kick myself.
Ben?
Christopher Guest.
Ah! Oh. I've only cost us 2 points out of 3 here. Shit, that means we can't get another one wrong. No pressure.
You say we, I've already won, because I'm already out in front, so I'm fine.
No, Megatron, don't shoot at me! No, Megatron, please! I'm an absolute arsehole!
Yeah. Your thingy, Majegu's not famous anymore. Shia LaBeouf. But yes! It's one of the worst impressions.
I'm not sure whether to veto this, but, oh, after the mud debacle of last week, I'm going to let you have that one. But that makes us even. Any more poor attempts?
I could have just sat there answering phones, or was he in an elevator for a whole day?
Just be like, just do it!
G'day, has anyone got any cakes? Or pies? G'day, I'm from Australia. Has anyone got any cakes, or pies, or sweets? Or a big bag of sugar?
Hugh Jackman?
It was, of course, Rebel Wilson.
Jesus. Obviously.
It's not even a quote.
It doesn't have to be a quote. It just has to be an impression.
Go on then, Mark.
I knew you said Rolf.
I love you, Jenny.
Tom Hanks.
Yes.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's your best one.
Thank you.
What score are we on now?
Like 4. We've got 3 wrong so far, so I don't think you can win.
We can draw.
We can draw. Yeah. You can tie.
No pressure.
Welcome to Earth.
What's that from?
That's like one of his classic lines. Welcome to Earth.
What are you looking at me for? He's doing impressions.
Any other ones? Because I'm
like... Oh, God. I try and avoid his films because I don't like the man.
Hint, come on. That literally could be most actors.
In West Philadelphia, born and raised in a playground where I spent most of my days.
Will Smith?
Correct.
Yes! I wanted you to sing the whole rap then, the whole thing.
I could have.
Everyone knows every word to that, you know, it's a fact. Yeah. It's like you're born with it in your brain.
They even know the extra verses that were in the song, not the theme tune.
There you go.
Big fan of Will Smith. And his clean rap.
I love you, Peter Parker. Oh my God. Oh my God, I'm falling. I hope I don't die.
Emma Stone.
Yes! Yes!
I'll give it you.
Yes! Last one.
Very, very touchy that was. I'm not sure whether I should, but you can have that.
So if I get this right, is that 7? Are we equal?
So it's an equal, yeah. So overall, I think you'd just be the winner.
Just me, yeah. Don't get cocky, kid.
More.
Punch it, Chewie. Punch it, Chewie.
Han Solo, which is Harrison Ford.
Correct.
Yes.
So we've ended up with a tie.
Yeah.
Is there anything we can do to have an overwatch stone paper scissors? I don't know.
I think Ben wins.
Just me, because I'm on both.
Because you're on both winning teams.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I haven't lost.
No,
which feels nice.
Lost.
Well done. Like, overall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although you were on the losing team with Adam, so you've both won and lost.
Yeah, all at the same time. And it doesn't feel good.
I think we can safely say that the real winners here are the listeners.
Oh, big time.
Some cracking impressions, some not so good impressions.
I've had fun, though.
Well, what's been your favourite attempt over the last three episodes?
I liked the very first one of Adam Sandler I did, where I did some sort of crazy guy saying about golf.
Yeah.
That was
just you being an angry man. I think you're Obi-Wan saying his own name inexplicably. that probably takes the biscuit for me.
I think Mark wins with the memorable attempts.
Yeah. I'm upset that none of the three of us put Tommy Wiseau in a part.
Oh, yeah.
How did we all miss that one?
Too easy. Yeah, too easy.
Too easy, it would be.
How about we all now do our best impression of Tommy, and the winner is whoever does the best Tommy. That's fair.
Go on, then you start.
I did not do it. It's not true. I did not. It's bullshit. Adam, let's hear yours.
I'm so glad I have you as my best friend, and I love Lisa so much.
Come on, Ben.
So, how's your sex life?
It's a draw again. It's all good.
It's a draw. What have we got on the next episode, game show wise?
Well, Gemma Popcorn Heart is coming back for a fourth appearance, uh-huh. So she finally gets that fourth stamp.
You can hear the cheers from the Skip to the End universe.
Indeed. And I think because she's here and it's a big occasion, I think we're going to have a one-off. Now, I'm not going to tell you about the game, but I'm going to tell you...
I thought that was the one-off, the Obi one-off. We all had to say Obi-Wan in Scottish accents.
That could work. But what we're going to do is we're going to have a one-off game where it's you, Ben,
yes,
Adam and Gemma, and I'll be the games master, and it's called Seen It.
Ooh.
And that's all you're going to know for now, but I can tell you now it's a great one for the people at home as well to play along to, so stick around for that in 2 weeks' time. It wouldn't be a Skip to the End episode without some listener questions. I love this section. I'm sure you're both always ready to see what they've got for us.
Yeah.
It is interesting to hear what you guys want to know from us.
Mm.
Or Ben, specifically.
There's none of that this time. But what I like as well is that you guys have no idea what I'm about to ask you, so it's always nice to kind of see you kind of squirm a little. Mm. So Trish Potts has come on Facebook, and she has said... Who would you each like to have on Skip the End as a celebrity co-host for a one-off episode?
Gemma.
I'm not talking an interview. I'm talking an actual full episode with someone who you want, ideally a celebrity.
Because
if we just said, our mate Jim who lives down the road, that'd be a bit boring, wouldn't it? I'm going to go with, I've got a couple of people. I would love Edgar Wright to be on here just for the fact we love him so much. And the podcast is called Skip the End, for Christ's sake. But as an entertainment value for us, Larry David.
Yeah.
It would be awesome.
He wouldn't say anything. He'd find the whole thing thoroughly annoying.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be a bit of a strange one, probably, but Saul Rubinek,
nice. Yes.
We met him at a Comic-Con about 18 months or two years ago now.
Yeah.
And he was so old hat, so great with sort of the media stuff and... I just think it'd be amazing just to have him on a show, hear his thoughts on things. I bet he's got a story for everything.
This is it. It'd be our longest podcast ever. We wouldn't edit any of it because his stories are gold.
And exactly. And it'd be complete gold and everything he said would be magnificent. Mm-hmm.
Boring answer for me, I think, but I'd want The Rock, just because I think The Rock is the consummate entertainer, and it seems there is nothing he can't do. So if he wanted to become a podcast host, he'd be pretty damn good at it.
And you're welcome. Yeah, if you want.
Yeah, oh, please do. Come
after
on, Rocky.
After Baywatch, come down.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'll listen.
Yeah, of course he does.
Lee Morgan. Was Mickey Rourke's Irish accent in A Prayer for the Dying the worst ever? Or did Tom Cruise clinch it with Far and Away? But I reckon we should add on this. What's the worst accent you guys know? Because they're both terrible, but can you think of any that are dreadful?
Well, sticking with Irish, I think the film is called The Devil's Own, where Brad Pitt plays like an IRA member, and it is the most shocking attempt at an Irish accent I've ever heard.
I think the Irish one is notoriously difficult to get right. I mean, mm-hmm. Colin Farrell's is awful.
Do you know what's funny? It's just going off to good accents here. I, for the longest time, thought that Gwyneth Paltrow was English, because the first thing I ever saw her in was Sliding Doors, and I thought her English accent, why, I just thought she was English. So it wasn't until I saw her in something a few years later with a natural American accent, I was like, why is she putting on this fake American accent?
Until you said that now, I believe she was English, so I didn't even know. Yes. So.
You know full well she's not English.
Well, you know.
It's like Hugh Laurie.
Yeah.
With his American accent, obviously. Americans actually thought he was American.
They did, yeah. I think he came out, it was like the Golden Globes or something.
After he won an award for House.
Yeah. And people were blown away. They're like, why is he putting on an English accent? Speaking of that, have you heard Benedict Cumberbatch's accent in the Doctor Strange trailer? He sounds exactly like Dr. House. He sounds like Hugh Laurie. Watch that trailer again and you won't be able to miss that now. He just sounds like House.
I'm trying to think of really bad accents, but one I can think
of... Any of your impressions?
All those. Shia LaBeouf, or whatever his twat's name this week, Nymphomaniac, when he's trying to be English. Have you seen that film?
I have not.
It is dreadful. But also, we have to say Nicolas Cage in Cornell, and he's that ultimate southern accent. Yeah. It's not good. It isn't good. But they're hard, man. Accents must be horrible. You hear how we struggle for...
Yeah.
Dick Van Dyke has to take the biscuit.
What about Tommy?
Mary Poppins.
Tommy Wiseau.
Tommy's American accent.
He is from America, before you question it.
Yeah, he's not from some Eastern Bloc country.
I didn't realise that was a place in the USSR.
John Jackson. How do you guys stay motivated to keep your podcast sounding fresh? You've done 50 episodes, including specials. I love the fact he's actually done that. And you always sound like you're loving it more than ever.
I think we are.
It's the coke, isn't it? The drugs.
It's just fun. It just is fun. Yeah. It's a fun way to spend a couple of hours. And I think because we've got a really good format, we're not just sort of pissing in the wind each episode. We know exactly what we're going to do in what order. And it allows, you know, to stick with it and have some fun with it.
And we genuinely try and make each other laugh on these things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what makes it fun, because we all come here with our lists, and we all come here with all the research we've done. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, we kind of throw a bit of it out the window and just try and make each other laugh with stupid things. And you guys seem to like it. Yeah. We enjoy it, and it is fun.
If you keep listening, we'll keep making it.
Yeah.
I remember when Rich and Gemma came on this podcast, and they didn't believe that we never discussed a film until we went on the recording. Mm. And I remember when Rich came back, he was like, oh, what did you think of Deadpool? I was like, I can't talk to you, sorry, because Ben's with me. I can't tell you. And he's like, don't be stupid, just tell me. There is a rule that we do not know what we think of the film until we record. Mm-hmm. We don't know what we're going to pick as the next rewatch. This is the truth. So when they tell us today, it's like, oh my God. And we don't know what we're picking for the skip back in time. We don't know. We're not allowed to talk outside this room.
Yeah. Our reactions to each other are genuine. Yeah.
There's certain times on, say, the review today, in which I think we all kind of know what each other's going to be thinking about a certain film.
I think that because we know each other's tastes, we all knew we loved Star Wars. We all knew we hated Knight of Cups without speaking a damn word.
But then you get the moments where you didn't like Deadpool and I was genuinely like, you know, so it's great.
Still 9 out of 10, is it?
Yes, it is. Definitely.
Still the best Marvel movie ever made?
Yes.
Or a Civil War?
Guardians just.
Yeah.
Tim Johnson, would you guys be sad if films do eventually go digital only? So no more DVDs, no more Blu-rays, pure digital.
I don't think I'd necessarily be sad. I think it would be a shame to lose things like Steelbooks and limited edition, collector's editions for digital only. And if you are going to do digital only, you need to make sure it's freely and readily available for people. Because Netflix, the way Netflix kind of works, obviously they license things for X amount of time.
Yeah.
And if they don't renew it, that's it, it's gone. I'd hate to think there'd be a situation in which you wouldn't be able to see something.
That's true.
And you'd have to pay $3.99 every time you wanted to, or something like that.
I think for me, I think I've discussed this on the podcast before, that for someone who considers himself a film buff, I don't own any Blu-rays or DVDs. I went digital a few years back. I sold all my stuff. So I'm more than happy for it to go digital. But I think, similar to your point, Adam, one of the things that you have to be aware of in a fully digital system is not everyone has good internet access. Mm-hmm. You know, I know people who live on the outskirts of cities who their internet is, they're basically on dial-up.
Yeah.
You know, so for them, Netflix is of no use whatsoever. So they can't go all digital.
I kind of contradict myself because I love, but you know this, I buy films all the time. I buy steelbooks. I'm a sucker. But I've got, like, downstairs I keep my films. But if it's on Netflix, I won't go down and get it. I will just watch it on Netflix, even though I could go downstairs and get the better, slightly better picture. So I kind of contradict myself. But
you're also kind of sitting there in a situation where if it did go off Netflix, you'd have it. You'd be able to go downstairs and get it.
Yeah.
I don't like the way that your whole collection, I remember when, you know, you're younger and you lose your iTunes library of all your music and you have to get it all. Mm. I don't like the idea that I could lose my whole collection I don't know.
And, you know, Amazon Prime is also available.
Yes. Yes. Other services exist.
But my bank balance would be a lot better off if they did make it just digital. Helen Andrews, is there a director that you have so much faith in now that you'll go and see a movie of theirs even if you haven't seen the trailer?
Oh, Terrence Malick.
Of course.
I'm going to say no. Nolan was kind of pitching a perfect game.
Yeah.
In a good analogy, I think. And then someone knocked it out of the park in the bottom of the ninth. Interstellar. So I don't think there is necessarily a director who could do a film that I wouldn't have seen the trailer for that I would go and watch. Potentially a Marvel film, but I can't imagine a situation with a Marvel film where I wouldn't have somehow seen the trailer or a TV spot or something because their media machine is so intense that you can't turn somewhere without seeing something.
Beam them directly into the back of your eyeballs now.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you to a degree on Nolan. Nolan and Tarantino, for me, are so good at what they do that even though both of their last films underwhelmed me greatly, I would happily go and see whatever they do next without a trailer, without knowing anything about it, because I believe they'll come good again.
Okay.
There's one director right now the world that I will go and see their film. Only right now, it could all go wrong. Ben Affleck. That's it at the moment.
Yeah, he's 3 for 3.
That's it.
Yeah.
So at the moment, bring out whatever you want, I'll go and see it. But I've been burnt by Nolan, I've been burnt by Kevin Smith, I've been burnt by...
multiple times. You're a multiple burn victim if you're a Kevin Smith
fan. I'm on fire. At Danielson 736, when you guys go and see a film based on a book, will you read it before recording or after seeing the movie? Because you've done this quite a few times, haven't you, Ben? You read quick.
I don't have one set system as to whether I read before or after. It tends to be A, do I have the time to read it before or not? And B, how much do I know already about the story? If I don't want the story to be ruined, then I'll wait and read the book after I've seen the film. But if I kind of already know what's going to happen, I'm happy to read the book before I see the film.
Yeah, I'm kind of on a level with that as well. There are times where I will make a conceited effort to try and read the book or to actually go out and buy the book and read it before I see the film. But there are other times where I just think, you know, I'm going to watch the film, and then if I enjoy the film, I'll then look at sort of differences in adaptation and then maybe go do a bit of research and then look at actually getting the book.
A perfect example of that for me is a film that I watched recently, and I know you went to see it as well, Mark, High Rise, which I thought was an absolutely phenomenal film. Have you seen it, Adam?
Yes.
It's mind-bending. It's such a brilliant film. I watched that. Immediately it finished, I was like, I need to watch this again.
Yeah.
And I haven't yet, but I'm going to. But the first thing I did afterwards is I went on Amazon and I bought the book by J.G. Ballard. So I'm going to start reading that very, very soon.
I haven't read it. My friend has actually lent me. It's his favourite book of all time.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So he actually... He's very pretentious, though.
Does he like Terrence Malick films?
Probably does, yeah. But he's a big fan of House of Leaves. Have you ever heard of the book?
No.
It's the one that's like written all upside down and back to front.
Oh, dear.
With one word on certain pages. It's really pretentious. He did his whole university English dissertation on it. So he's very pretentious with books. So I'm not holding out a lot of hope. After seeing the film, I was like, give me a book.
Yeah, big time.
I can answer it. I can't read.
we are well aware.
I've just done the Hungry Caterpillar, and that was pretty epic.
That's why he gets all the names wrong. You guys laugh, and we laugh, but it's actually quite serious.
Actually dyslexic.
Yeah, it's not nice. At Red Freds, I want to skip to the end mug. How do I get one? Well, you don't
design
just
get it. Sell loads, and then we'll sue you.
They retail at $99.99, and you can ask for one at my personal email address.
Do you know what? I'll say it now. I'm not going to say what episode, but I will give one, like we did with the Star Wars design t-shirt. I'll give one away, maybe a special occasion sometime soon.
We've got something of a special occasion on the horizon, haven't we?
You never know. So watch this space, and that will be a one-off again, apart from the ones that we've got, lads. Tommy Rushmore. Is there a movie star that you loved that's now tarnished their career so badly you won't even watch a film with them in?
Ooh.
I wouldn't say anyone could tarnish their career so badly that I wouldn't watch a film they were in, based purely on the fact they're in it.
Who have you lost the most respect for then? I'm not talking Don Cucino. I want the ultimate.
This is it, though. There's people like Al Pacino and Robert De Niro, which nowadays, if they bring a film out, I'm generally kind of, will I see it, will I not?
Yeah.
And I'll do a hell of a lot of research into the film before I go and watch it. or before I decide whether to watch it or not. But there's not necessarily someone who is so bad or has done a couple of films that are so bad that I would say no.
Yeah. Justin Long in Tusk. He's testing the water, isn't he?
I think I'm with Adam on this. I don't think there's anyone that I used to love and now won't watch in anything, but there are people that I kind of have gravitated away from because of the crap they made. Bruce Willis is a perfect example for me. Ugh. Anytime a new Bruce Willis film came out, a good action film or action comedy, I'd be like, yeah, this will be a bit of fun. And then he's just put out this never-ending stream of shit. And pretty much everything he does now is straight to DVD. So, won't watch him. It's just, why should I? I just feel no desire to.
And then there's people like Adam Sandler, who we all loved in Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
And we just gravitate away from in general.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, if he's in the room.
I can't I can't think of anyone apart from Stifler.
Scott.
His career was so good, and then he did Role Models. I mean, such a different character.
Role Models is a great film.
I like Role Models.
Role Models is a tremendous film with him and Paul Rudd.
Yeah, it's a great film.
And he's also in a film called Goon, where he plays an ice hockey player, which is
that.
A brilliant
I like,
film.
I like
yeah.
That.
Okay, well, I'll take that back. He did Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Why don't you like Role Models?
I just didn't like him in it.
Oh, just him?
Really, yeah.
I really like that film.
I'm not saying about the film, I'm saying him.
The little kid's amazing.
Yeah. Very last one, Alan Schwartz with a Z at the end. Have you ever gone to see or purchased a movie down to just the cover?
No.
I don't think I have. I've never gone and seen a poster or a cover or bought anything on. Have you actually gone to HMV and gone, ooh?
Actually.
Or any other.
Well, there aren't any other shops to buy them, actually.
I think it was Megapython versus Gatoroid.
Awesome.
I think I was just like, I saw the cover and I was like, this is going to be so bad, but so good. And so I bought it.
I've never done it. I think the closest I might have ever come is when I saw the DVD case for Bad Milo.
That looks amazing. With the lying down with the little alien in the bed.
Yeah, because I didn't know what it was. And no. I think had you seen it or you knew of it, hadn't
God,
you?
Of course
Of course you have, yeah. So I didn't know what it was. And I think I mentioned it to you and you told me. I thought it was just it is a random B movie, but I thought it was old. I didn't realise it was only a couple of years old.
Yeah. The only one I remember that I saw the DVD of, this was years ago, I saw the cover for Westworld with the robot of the cowboy. And I did think, wow, that's awesome. And I don't know if I went and watched it afterwards, but that was the one where, you know, I was tempted to go and spend some money. And then Birdemic when I was in HMV.
Oh, yeah.
Just for you guys.
Cheers. Thanks.
That's all the questions for this week. If you have any more, then come on skiptothend.co.uk. And on there, we've got Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and email. And we'll answer them all again with Gemma in 2 weeks' time.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. And I'm exhausted just from laughing, mainly. I am spent. I need a nice long rest after that.
I am as well. It's back to that question everyone's always got, how do you keep it so fresh? Listen to us. We're having fun. This isn't put on. I'm having the time of my life with my two best mates. Aww. What else could I ask for? And Adam and Ben.
Who are your two best mates then?
My two testicles.
Brilliant.
Bill and Ben.
One of them's called Ben as well. That's odd. was he named after me? Or did he predate me? I don't know.
That's a whole new episode.
Nutcast.
Christ.
Oh, God.
I thought we'd all be a bit tired as well. I say all. I thought me and Ben would be a bit tired because we were out on the lash at the weekend.
We had a heavy one. We did indeed. But we survived to fight another day. Next episode is going to be great. We'll talk about the content later, but mainly it's going to be great because our old mate, Popcorn Heart Gemma, is back once again.
When he says old mate, she's 79 years old. She looks good for her age.
She looks it after the...
Yeah, she survived some stuff, hasn't she?
Yeah,
she's lived to tell a tale.
So we're going to have Gemma back, and we're going to be reviewing with Gemma X-Men Apocalypse.
It's going to be ace.
I can't wait for that. I didn't like the first trailer. I was ambivalent towards the second one, but by the third and fourth, I'm sold. They're just looking better and better, aren't they?
Trailers, though.
it's too many, isn't it? And they probably had one of those teaser trailers as well. Yeah. And now they have teasers for teasers as well these days. Which
don't
is
get me
mental.
Wrong, it's a good job because the first was bad, the second was near, and the third and fourth have been brilliant. But, you know, get it right first time.
Yeah, simple as that, isn't it? So we're going to be reviewing that, which is great. What year are we going to skip back in time to, Adam?
It's, of course, going to be 1984.
It
which
is.
Which isn't a Bowling for Soup song. But
that's a shame.
I want you to come back with something.
Just imagine that. They just did an album of 85, 84, 83.
What's Taylor Swift's album called?
1989.
Oh, that's 'cause she's young. Missed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a child. Mark, what's the topic?
It is the top three robots from films.
That's going to be amazing. Yeah, that is going to be just as good as Aliens, isn't it?
There's a lot.
Yeah, there's going to be a fair few. We're going to have a one-off game. What's that called, Mark?
It is called...
Seen it!
I love how you try to make your forgetfulness into like a build-up.
Seen it! It's like, honestly, it's going to be great. I'm not building it up to fail. This is going to be great.
Can we call it John Seen It?
And our rewatch is the Tom Green masterpiece, Freddy Got Fingered. God, I cannot wait.
I forgot about that, to be honest.
So did I. I was having so much fun in the last few segments.
Let me know. I want to know Gemma's reaction when this episode goes live. Gemma's reaction to having to do that. I'm sure she'll tweet us and let us know.
So that's it for 2 weeks, boys.
Yeah.
Pleasure as always.
It is indeed.
Tally ho. Like a